And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back to the show. Joining us right now, right here with me in studio, is Wayne Winston. On Wednesdays, we mix it up and we talk about sometimes controversial issues from different points of view, sometimes the same point of view. But we do mix it up, and very often our stories have to do with conversations around race. 203-333-9422. You're welcome to be part of it. Wayne, you had sent me the story of a teacher in Rochester, New York. Okay? Rochester, New York. Okay, not Ahamsveld, right?
Yes.
Rochester, New York.
Yes.
Who decided that, and I think it was middle school, who decided, but it might have been high school, who decided that he would teach the story of slavery by separating the children in his classroom. He separated them by race.
Mm-hmm.
And then he assigned the black children and the children of color to go ahead and pick cotton, you know, do something with cotton, and the white children to impersonate masters, right? And then one of the kids came home and told his mother, and she couldn't believe what she was hearing, but she decided to investigate it, as most parents would.
Mm-hmm.
And she found out, yeah, it's true. Now, immediately the teacher was apologized for by the district, and I believe he was recently suspended. It made national news.
Mm.
It's a speechlessifying story to even report, Wayne.
Well, it shows just how, as we discuss on this show, that the psychological damage of racism is that it appeared to that teacher to be a good idea to have black kids pick cotton in front of the white students to give what impression. Okay, what were you doing? Clearly, it wasn't for the benefit of the black kids, because how is them picking cotton going to enhance their psychology or mindset towards this terrible thing of slavery? You know, and then have the white kids act like the masters. You're basically perpetuating the worst type of oppression that a kid can face. Now, these are children. I think this will be traumatic for these kids for a long time.
Well, listen to this. He placed handcuffs and leg shackles on his mostly black students. I guess they were mostly black kids in the class. And he made them pick cotton during a seventh grade social studies class. The mothers of two children in different class sections said their children shared the same anecdotes with them this week. This is a very recent story,
mm-hmm.
including that the teacher, whose name is Patrick Roush, and he's a 20-year veteran in the Rochester schools.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed white students in the classes to stop when they complained. He refers to himself as the massa. One woman said, her name is Precious Tross, whose daughter is in Roush's class, said, mm-hmm. I almost drove off the road as she was talking about this. She said she, meaning her daughter, feels belittled. He made a mockery out of slavery. How dare you? You know what's interesting about this? Let's start with the germ of empathy.
Okay.
And let's start with the idea that for children to learn empathy, in general, it's not a bad idea to role play.
Sure.
I would agree with it. Personally,
sure.
I think it's a very helpful tool to
sure.
teach empathy.
Sure.
One of the ways you could have dealt with this is sort of the randomized way, like kids with the last name of A through L, you get to play one role,
mm-hmm.
and kids with M through Z another role. In 20 minutes, we switch.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody gets a chance to play every role,
mm-hmm.
and you're not dividing the kids in your class on the basis of the color of their skin,
mm-hmm.
but you're allowing white people to feel what it must have felt like to be a white person as a master, and then feel like what a black person must have felt like as a slave, and vice versa. Let
mm-hmm.
the black kids feel like both, too.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think that role-playing is a very useful way to teach empathy. I think that this teacher,
mm-hmm.
and the way that he did it,
mm-hmm.
is the worst kind of doubling down of racism.
Agreed.
The worst.
Agreed.
The worst.
Agreed. Agreed.
Allowing children to role-play in what was traditionally a historical role because of the color of their skin basically teaches the children we've made no progress at all. Zero.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's a smart guy. I mean, come on, you're a teacher.
So what do you think he was trying to do here,
Well,
Wayne?
I think that he has his own personal issues, and he was conveying them through the children. There's a lot of white supremacists, and they're out there in places of power.
Oh,
and
so you
influence.
Think he might have been...
I think he did it on purpose.
I see.
I think he wanted these young white kids in his class, because in his mind...
He's white,
he wanted them to feel the power, and this is what you know, you do with black people. They're supposed to stay in their place. You're putting shackles on kids. You know, I mean, like...
Shackles?
You can't...
This was in a lesson earlier that year where black students had been made to wear handcuffs and leg shackles. And when they failed to wriggle out of them, they reported, he said to them, "It's okay, your ancestors couldn't either." Oh, my
I think that says it all.
He never should have.
He never should have been able to get to this part with the cotton picking. I don't know.
I don't know why that earlier wasn't reported either.
This is what I'm saying. So there's something going on even within that school system that allowed him to be there. That is unacceptable by anyone's terms. And if you have any type of moral turpitude in your heart or even in your mind, this man is perpetuating these atrocities to these kids.
You know what else bothers me? We're chatting with Wayne Winston, 203-333-9422. So the school is apoplectic. He's been put on leave.
Oh, great.
But
yeah,
you know what
leave.
Bothers me? What bothers me is that the Teachers Association has a Teachers Association. I don't want to mention the name. It's irrelevant. But that the person said he could not comment. Because what happens is when you have a role of representing a group, a union, a teachers association, a police, whatever it is, you're very reluctant to speak out against an individual member of your group on behalf of the larger whole to protect the reputation of all teachers. To me, you don't have to go in front of a lawyer or a judge.
Right.
If these facts are represented as true, and apparently they were, I mean, maybe if he's denying it, it's one thing, but I don't see anything that says he's denying it.
Right.
So if it happened as true, and you represent a teachers association, don't you think you ought to say, I mean, my own opinion, you know, on behalf of all teachers, if this is as true, we condemn this. We don't know that it's true, and he has a right to defend himself. But if these facts are presented as true, it's not a no comment. It's we condemn this because we are teachers, too. And you don't see that enough in America, in my opinion. This is just another example of news stories where people in positions of power on behalf of groups are so afraid of condemning one of their own that they don't speak up on behalf of the profession as a whole. We see it a lot.
Well, that's because, you know, they want to use... The well, it's an ongoing investigation, so therefore I can't make a comp. Okay, now I don't know that that covers the idea that you can say this is horrible if it happened, because then you'll have somebody on the other side. From the legal standpoint, I believe it goes, see, you're biased already because look what you said over there. You basically convicted the person and you jaded.
But this is just the Teachers Association. They're not judging him. They're not in a court of law.
Well, that's why I'm saying I think they want to hold themselves, as you're saying.
You're right.
Some wiggle room.
You're right.
So that we don't want to make a statement. But the bigger picture is these people exist. This is not 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. This is now. And the people who have been affected by this, there's a court now out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the judge, a judge that's there, says they can move forward with suing for reparations. And that's critical. And
yeah, I saw that, Sari, this story. Yes, I saw that this week. I thought that was... By the way, I just want to say another point of view. One of my listeners disagrees with me entirely.
Okay.
And says, role-playing inhumanity is not how you develop empathy or unity. We wouldn't dream of role-playing Auschwitz or Ukraine's invasion or Pol Pot. So what she... And I know it's a woman. So what she is saying is, Lisa, you're wrong.
Okay.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Okay.
And that's not how you develop empathy. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think sometimes you can develop empathy in role playing, but maybe you have to be very careful about what you're role playing and the way in which you do it.
Everything is context.
Yeah, everything is context.
You have role playing in classrooms where you have people who they're being Frederick Douglass, or they're being Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, or they're reading stories or taking, you know, sharing things or even creating characters.
Mm-hmm.
So those things are role playing.
Yeah.
This right here was a vicious, malicious,
racist
incident. And I do not know how that school system, after the shackles, allowed this man to stay on there. So now this is why it leans toward, we talk about the institutionalized racism. What principal that I could think of, whether it's Westport or wherever else, even to Bridgeport, would allow that teacher to stand to not even get to this point? Because for him, that was a green light. Well, if they didn't stop me there.
Maybe you're right.
You know, there is.
If nobody said anything, if nobody told on me.
Yes, there is a agenda for white supremacy in this country. They are absolutely blowing the roof off of the incidents. These are not something that we can take lightly. The people who stormed the Capitol, part of their mantra, when you look through all their stuff, they're not about diversity and inclusion. They're about upholding those things that they believe that the Constitution at its very root was, which excluded people and black people to be subservient, so on and so forth. These extremists have that in their mission statement. So for Jewish people and for people of color, we weren't in that Constitution in that way, and blacks in particular. So as they go through this, they feel that they're right. The government that they want to take over, that January 6th, we should be very, very careful and understand it can happen again when we have a Supreme Court justice's wife. And this is not us saying this. It's out there for the world. And they're making a comment that says,
all right, well, you've just segued into the Supreme Court.
Yes.
We're going to move to that in just a moment. 203-333-9422. We're talking with Wayne Winston. We're bringing up some controversial subjects. You're welcome to be part of the conversation. 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.
And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
They're stopping us from having...
And welcome back to the show. Wayne Winston is in the studio with us, 203-333-9422. Wayne, you touched on a subject of controversy that we have not discussed on this show, but if you'd like to discuss it, go ahead. And that is the allegation that the political activities of Ginni Thomas have compromised her husband's ability to be able to be fair and unbiased when it comes to decisions that will come before him in the court. Now, just a little bit of context. There's nobody in the country who can tell a Supreme Court justice to recuse him or herself.
Great.
They are the top judges. They are on their own honor and integrity to know and decide when they should not hear a case. So, yes, there's criticism of Justice Thomas, but in the end, it's going to be his decision to decide whether or not he can judge cases fairly. And I just want to play devil's advocate here on this point of view. We have to be really careful in general when we say that judges can't decide cases based on the behavior of their spouses. It's not their own behavior. Spouses have lives, too.
Agreed.
So with that in mind, how do you feel about this?
Well, I think because the situation is so extreme, I mean, literally, this was a coup that happened. I mean, there was no question. An attempted coup. And they were telling us flat out, when my mom used to tell me, if somebody tells you something enough times, believe them, whether
it's
like
Putin in Ukraine. It scares me to death.
Their goal was to keep Donald Trump in. Their goal was they brought a noose and a hanging thing, bring Pence out, to even go that far, to bring something to Washington to say, bring out the vice president of the United States, because we have to deal with him, because he's not of going along with this agenda. And all of these groups within it has those undertones of what the racism psychology is. It's melded together, and we didn't meld it together on this show. It didn't just happen with Donald. This has been out there. It's what he tapped into, and we're dealing with today. So when you have Jenny Thomas, and she is sending things to Mark Meadows, a high-ranking official who's saying, hey, listen, hold on. The troops that are coming to support you are on the way. We could say, well, you know, Clarence didn't know anything about it. We could say that. You know, he could say, well, you know, none of that stuff that my wife talked about, and there's so much more, that's not going to have a bearing, and it doesn't reflect upon how I'm going to do my job. I understand that. But because it is such a critical situation for this country to believe that every one of our Supreme Court justices will make a determination, even if it's one I don't agree on, that they're doing it without their spousal influence, that's a pretty heavy thing to think about. Because, you know, your wife, your husband.
So do you think Clarence Thomas should recuse himself from all decisions that may reach the court affecting January 6th?
I think on a, because see, there's all, and then it could be case-by-case basis. Because, you know, there's so many pieces to this
thing
with the prosecution.
There are many pieces to it,
yeah. So should it be each and everything? I don't know. But for sure, some things that directly have to do
with
the phone
calls. What if Merrick Garland were to lodge a charge against Donald Trump that goes to the core of leading an insurrection? And that case made its way to the Supreme Court. Do you think Clarence Thomas should recuse himself given what was disclosed about his wife's emails?
Well, based upon that, yes, because you want the trust of the American people. You know, God knows that the challenge of black people and the benefit of black people is that we go back to court over and over and over and over. There's a time in history, Plessy versus Ferguson, Dred Scott, where the Supreme Court agreed with the laws of the land. No, you guys have no rights to be subjected to that white people have
1896,
to to.
Separate but equal.
Okay. And then we had to have a civil rights movement in 1965 for everybody to get the right to vote. See how crazy that is. And then King is killed literally for getting the right to vote. So the extremism is there. So when you get to this point where you get to that court, you want to make sure that that court is not biased. Now, it doesn't matter that he's black or if he's white. You know, it wouldn't matter to me, because that right there, with you supporting people, your wife supporting people, and Trump always said, hey, if it gets to the Supreme Court, we got Supreme Court, and there's more stuff around that. If you play some of that stuff that's just out there that all of the stations have to play, not something that, well, you notice the left over there trying to, you know, criminal. This is stuff that's real. And if you take that, you want to keep the integrity and the trust within the court, because it's the highest court in the land.
So what do you think about, speaking of integrity of court, I mean, the story is a bombshell that this draft decision by Justice Alito leaked that, if you read it, looks like it's a decision written by a majority to overturn Roe v. Wade. And I read a lot of it. I had to stop in the middle. What do you think about the leak itself, Wayne Winston?
Well, you know, the way the Supreme Court works, everything is secret. I mean, obviously, this is unprecedented. It's never happened before. You know,
you think it undermines the integrity of the court process that it was leaked?
I think to the degree of it let people know, it's like a genie you can't put back in a bottle. Okay. When you leak something, and there's been leaks that have happened throughout the years. Texaco with Barry Ellen Roberts, who said there's so many blacks in the jelly bean. And Texaco was treating people, not taking the black customers seriously. And that caused a whole big lawsuit and so on, her being executive and so on and so forth. That's a big story in the past. But we have those things, whistleblowers all over the place. I think the person that let that out,
yeah, what do you
felt
think?
That they were whistleblowing. Because this is such,
like, sort of the Pentagon Papers falling on their sword.
Yeah, it's because it's like, this is huge. How do you take a woman's right to choose? I don't understand it. I get that there's people that are totally against it. Great.
Well,
you
did
know?
We talked about this last week. Did you follow the debate that ensued from the House to the Senate where there were some more black members of the Connecticut Senate who spoke up. One person said, I'll reluctantly vote for this bill, but I'm not happy about it, and I think that more questions need to be asked. And they're coming at this from a racial point of view.
Yes.
Now, I got to tell you, Wayne, I know a lot of women that have had abortions. They're all white.
Well, this is where
but
I'm saying.
But those happen to have been my family and friends that would have told me that they had abortions.
Understood. Understood. Well, look, a woman's right to choose for whatever reason that that is. That's between them and God or them and their doctor. You know, I know a woman who was raped and it was horrible, but she decided to keep the child. You know, it caused issues, but in the end, it worked out for her.
Okay.
You know, there's people that do it for financial reasons. It's their right to do. I don't have the right to make that decision as another human being because you may be able to deal with another child financially. That could break someone on that side. You know, we'll take them all and, you know, we have them and then we give them all to the church. I mean, because that's what they're saying on the other side. Well, I don't remember the Catholic Church having, like, all these nurseries across the country saying, bring them on in. We'll find a place for them to go. In fact, statistically, black children are the last ones adopted. Not that they aren't, but they're usually white families look for white families. And I get it. So when you have people out there saying that, and just some of my couple of black counterparts who say, well, this is about having some type of genocide or it's a choice. Unless somebody drug you into that place and made you have it, that's just as off the table. Because sometimes people, there's so much into
their
thing.
So do you think it's a little bit of a paternalistic attitude to say that it's a genocide, that it's sort of belittling a black woman's ability to make the choice for herself?
No, because it's every woman's right. And it, cause if
no,
you
but
just,
what I'm saying, if you say it's a genocide, it's sort of like our people haven't been properly informed, and that's why they're doing it more. It's a little bit paternalistic, right? Oh, well, I wanted to ask you about something. We're going to run out of time.
Okay.
Did you see this week that the FDI wants to ban menthol cigarettes?
I did not.
Okay. This is a huge story. I'll tell you why. It turns out that 85% of black tobacco users like menthol.
Yes.
85%?
Yes.
I didn't know this. Maybe you know this. I'm not a smoker and I'm not black. So, okay.
Yes.
But 85%.
Yes.
So the FDA is crowing that it is, by banning mentholated cigarettes, they're going to be helping the black community because they're banning their most popular cigarette. But they're not banning all cigarettes, and they're not saying tobacco is illegal. I have to tell you something. We're going to run out of time. When I read that story, it bothered me.
Okay.
I thought it was very paternalistic.
Yes, I can say that.
Do you
that.
See what
yes,
I'm
you
saying?
Can say that. Yes, I
it
can.
Was like, it's legal, but we're going to take away black people's favorite cigarettes.
Well,
I didn't like it.
Hopefully, that will mean less people smoking.
Well, that's their
argument. Because they can't get it. That's what they're hoping.
They say they're doing black people a favor.
Yes.
But it rankled me.
Understandably so.
You know what I mean?
I do understand.
All right, we're going to talk more. We'll talk more next week. Don't forget, Norm Pattis is up from noon to 2. And then from 2 to 6, you've got Paul Pacelli.